Hello and welcome. Yes, you are on 2SER 107.3 and this is Final Draft. Now, I hope you have had an amazing week of reading because that is what I am all about. Final Draft is books, writing and literary culture. Let's get started by acknowledging that 2SER here on Broadway is broadcasting from the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. While I am recording from home, I am recording on the lands of the Darug and the Gundungurra people. This is stolen land. It is Aboriginal land. I pay my respects to the traditional owners and their ongoing connection to that land. But there is unresolved issues. There has been no treaty in Australia, and this is something that is ongoing, and we need to be addressing this. We need to be respecting the First Nations people. And it's been an absolutely fantastic week. The Prime Minister's Literary Awards was announced, and so many incredible stories. And what I want to do is actually kind of reshare them with you because the likes of Tara June Winch won the award for novels with The Yield, such an incredible, incredible novel. A children's book called Kui Mitigar, Song on Darug Songlines. We featured the author Jasmine Seymour on the show. They won for the children's category. And I want to reshare these stories over the summer. Also, huge congratulations to Omar Saker. He won for Poetry with Lost Arabs. I'm so happy for all of these authors and just the well-deserved recognition of their incredible work. Today on the show, I kind of dived in and I'm going to be talking about two books. In fact, a duology. I've got Will Kostakis joining me today. He is an incredible author of young adult fiction and his latest is a series. It is Monuments and Rebel Gods. Will and I are going to be getting into his exploration of a really interesting kind of fantasy theology involving gods that have been buried under high schools in Sydney and a group of teenagers who discover them. That is coming up on Final Draft. You are on 2SER 107.3. Join me. It's all on after this very short break.
2SER wishes to acknowledge the custodians of the land from which we broadcast, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation and the Wadumatagal clan of the Darug Nation, and their elders past, present and emerging. We acknowledge and respect their continuing culture and the contribution they make to the life of this city and this region.
You are on 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft. It is books, writing and literary culture. My name is Andrew Popel and I have got a fantastic, not just one book, two books to share with you today. From Will Kostakis, he is an award-winning author of young adult fiction. His first novel, Loathing Lola, was released when he was 19. He followed this up with the first third, Sidekicks, and starting last year, Will's first fantasy novel, Monuments. Now, the second and final chapter of this series, Rebel Gods, came out this year, right when we needed a little divine intervention. Will's joining me today. We're going to talk Monuments and Rebel Gods. Will, thank you so much for joining me on Final Draft.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Now, I thought it might be appropriate to begin with kind of a minor spoiler alert. I hate spoilers. I don't ever want to give spoilers. But I think inevitably when we start talking about Rebel Gods, we run the risk of giving away some details from Monuments. I personally don't think that takes anything away from the enjoyment. But I mean, people should definitely go out and check out Connor, Sally and Lockie as they seek to uncover the ancient gods that are known as monuments that are hidden under high schools in Sydney. And as they race to find the monuments, they must confront the danger of the hounds and the question of who, if anyone, has the right to control so much power. That's Monuments. Now, Rebel Gods, the trio have a new danger that they must face. The Rebel Gods personify our deepest and perhaps our darkest influences of love, fear and hunger. These gods have been imprisoned for thousands of years after they plunged the world into war. Now they're back and they're coming for Lockie, Sally and Connor. I wondered though, so the Monuments, the duology, it's a bit of a departure from your earlier work in that it's delving into fantasy with its gods and mythology, but I actually suspect that it's not so far from the themes that have concerned all your writing. So maybe instead of my asking you why a pantheon of gods, we could talk about the ways that gods and mythologies have always reflected and concerned themselves with the very sort of core of our humanness and our human relationships.
The big thing is that I love writing families and dealing with sort of these gods. It was just a different kind of family. It was one that had a much longer history than I'm used to writing. And that was a really great springboard into then writing the series. I really used, you know, Connor, Lockie and Sally, I wanted them to be empowered teams where they drive the story forward themselves. And so I used the metaphor of them becoming gods to look at sort of those first awkward steps that we all make into adulthood, you know, navigating not only the people that we want to be, but our existing and changing relationships with, you know, the people we thought were gods growing up, our parents and our grandparents, the people that we learned from.
Now, in Rebel Gods, Connor and Sally and Lockie, they have leveled up. And mm-hmm. I'm still keeping it super vague on the hows and whys for the people who need to read Monuments. I definitely felt though that between the monuments, and the rebel gods and our heroes, you're engaging with this sense of inheritance and legacy. Mm-hmm. And I wondered about these parallels, or I saw these parallels with discussions around climate change, you know, institutionalized structures mm-hmm. that pop up, racism, and basically all the shit that our world is dealing with that has its origins in generations past.
Yeah. Well, a big part, Rebel Gods changed its shape so many times. As I was sort of drafting it, you know, because the book is set in 2020 and I was so intent on writing a book that was realistic to 2020, not realizing there was a plague coming. And so the first book takes place, it was written in 2018, but it is set in March 2020 when, as we know, nothing historical of note happened.
Yeah.
And then...
No one expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Exactly. And then what ended up happening while I was drafting Rebel Gods, and I was really in the sort of weeds of figuring out what this story was, you know, around the time of the, you know, school strike, and you're seeing empowered teenagers all over the country. And so it did have a lot of its origins in sort of who these characters were in that political moment and in sort of teenagers like Greta Thunberg sort of standing up and saying enough is enough and seeing what Australian teenagers were capable of when teachers and parents gave them the space to organize things like that. And so the first few drafts of Rebel Gods, and I say that as if I spent more than 8 months on the book entirely, it was just a very sort of rapid process and constantly evolving. But those early drafts did involve those more specific political movements. And then so more references to climate change, more references to sort of incarceration and injustice. And it's a fraught subject matter where I, you know, as a sort of Greek Australian want to, who is writing an Aboriginal character named Lockie, I wanted to shine a light on the injustices that we see and we are aware of every day, but without sort of speaking and taking up space that people who have experienced that and who have more of a personal connection to that, they should be occupying that space.
Now, teen superheroes have a long history and they've long engaged with issues around discrimination and othering. Mm-hmm. But queer superheroes, they used to be fringe, they were hidden, victims of things like the comic book code in America. I still remember what a big deal it was when Marvel Comics featured the wedding of their most prominent gay character at the time back in 2012. Connor and Lockie's relationship, though, it's by contrast, mm-hmm. it's very matter of fact in the story. How are these, and forgive the term I'm dubbing here, how are these super queer depictions evolving?
There are a couple of things at play here. There's me as an author not wanting to constantly relive my trauma. If I am constantly writing a coming out story every single time, then I have to write about that Greek kid in the corner who's scared of telling people he's gay, right? And if I constantly do that, at some point that's going to rub off on me and how I view the world. Second point is, as somebody who does have a responsibility, who is writing for teenagers, we seem to tell all these stories, these traumatic coming out stories, and then we hint at, oh, it's going to get better, and then the book ends. We never actually show, or it's not, I won't say never, but predominantly in the culture, we are far more comfortable showing queer suffering than we are showing queer joy. And so I knew when I was stepping into this book, I was like, you know what? I'd just come off, you know, writing The Sidekicks, which was quite a cathartic experience for me because it mirrored my own coming out. And I came out to my family as I was writing it because the story gave me the strength to sort of do that. But at the same time, when that book came out, there was this whole brouhaha where, you know, schools were questioning whether it was appropriate for me, a now gay author, to speak at schools when I had spent close to a decade doing it previously. And so I was like, you know what? I'm just going to write sort of this positive rep, and that's what I want to write. The thing is, though, we think that queer suffering is realistic. We think that it is a rite of passage, that you're going to have to talk to your parents and it is possible they won't accept you. But the reason why we think that that is the norm is because that may have been our experience 10, 20 years ago, and because it's still repeated in media. If you meet sort of queer kids today, and, you know, when I visit schools and I am constantly bombarded with the queer kids, they have different experiences. Support is more the norm. Like acceptance, not just acceptance, not just tolerance, love is the norm. And we live in a world now where straight kids are faking being gay on TikTok for clout. Like the way that we explore queerness has shifted, and that's because, you know, a big part of it is there are far more queer storytellers and far more queer stories coming through the mainstream because they're proving to be popular. And so when it came to crafting Connor, I wanted his story to not have to deal with the traumas of coming out. And obviously that's difficult because when you're trying to build a story, it's based in conflict. And so there were suggestions from editors who were like, oh, you know, Monuments begins with Connor and his best friend having a friend divorce. And so it was floated to me quite early on. Oh, is the friend divorced because he's gay? Can we make it that he was rejected by his friend because he's gay? And I had to be like, no, absolutely not. They have whatever their sort of tip is, that's not it. But it's something, there's a resistance still, and there's something quite, I don't want to say my work is radical, it isn't particularly radical, but there is a quiet sort of radical element to just letting queer teenagers experience joy and show them the lives that they can live. And those are the stories that we see in straight stories all the time. And I wanted to make sure that there was that sort of kind of queer story as well in Rebel Gods.
Will Kostakis is the author of the Monuments duology. It consists of Monuments and Rebel Gods, which came out this year. We are discussing how narratives, particularly narratives of life, can counter narratives of trauma. Will and I are going to continue this conversation, but I want to share a track now. We have been keeping it local. We have been looking at supporting Australian music this year. We are not changing that before the end of the year. This is a track from a Sydney-based band. They are called Megafauna. And this is, I mean, I love this track. It feels like it's kind of like a love song to that most purple of trees. It's called Jacaranda.
Jacaranda, by the veranda, but you're all-
You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. This is Final Draft, Books, Writing and Literary Culture. My name is Andrew Popel, and just there we heard from Sydney band Megafauna. That was their track Jacaranda. Did you relate to it? Those Jacaranda flowers do get very slippery when they cover the footpath, but oh so beautiful. We are going to get back into a conversation with Will Kostakis. Will is a YA author of such incredible novels as The First Third, but today we're discussing his fantasy YA duology Monuments and Rebel Gods. Throughout, I felt this overriding concern with friendships. You mentioned there that Monuments begins with Connor having a friend divorce, and that occupies his thoughts. Sally is terribly emotionally scarred by the people that she's lost. It makes her both distant, and I saw her at times, she's very controlling of Connor and their developing relationship. Mm-hmm. She kind of, I mean, it'd probably be too far to say that she's gaslighting Connor, but she really does eke out the friendship moments and uses them against him. And you present one of my favorite ironies of superhero narratives, where you have supposedly invulnerable beings who are actually, in the central narrative, the most fragile, the most likely to be lost to the story. So what did that fantasy element bring to your ability to discuss these ideas of loss and this aftermath and dealing with loss?
All of my works are about loss. I think it's a side effect of my best friend passing away when I was in high school. Ever since then, try as I might, I am constantly wrestling with loss in my work. And whether it's because I need counseling or just because that just something flipped a switch in me, and that is just, it's a theme that I'm drawn to time and time again. With the monuments themselves, when we meet them in the first book, I loved the idea of them being super strong but also weak as piss. And I loved the idea of playing a lot of their death for laughs and then pathos. And that was to sort of show that all these people that we think are super powerful, their grip on power is tenuous at best. They've held on to it too long. It was itself a story about, passing on power to those people who want to enact positive change rather than sort of concentrating at the top and it getting rusted on. And I loved their sort of fragility and that loss. But Connor is spending the entire first book running. He is running away from his grandfather, who is on the way out, and he's running away from his friendship divorce. He's learning throughout the first book to confront that loss and to come to terms with it, and to do what he can as he's losing something to make the most of it. And in terms of Sally, I wanted to look at what loss can sometimes inspire us to do. And if you look at the entire story, I'll try to talk about this without giving stuff away, but all of the problems in the first book are caused by decisions the teenagers made. If Sally had better processed her loss, then the entire story would not have happened. It was just about how grief can drive us to do positive things, but it can also drive us to do destructive things. And she then sort of goes into that mode where it's like, I've lost something. I don't want to lose anything anymore, so I'm not going to build anything anymore. And so in the first book is very much about her sort of, she sometimes lets Connor in and then she pushes him away instantly. Mm-hmm. The second book, she lets her guard down more and more, and it's about her sort of coming into herself and moving past that grief. And there is a metaphor of, when you're a god, you are suddenly ageless. And so she is literally stunted, and she doesn't grow from that point. And then sort of the story happens, and I won't sort of spoil where it ends up. I am endlessly fascinated by grief, and every time, this was me starting a book thinking, I'm not going to write about grief. I'm not going to write about death. It has the most death in it of any of my books, and it is the most concerned with grief.
It's interesting also, as you were talking there, very much it depends on the lens we put on the world and the way we invest power depends on how we see that power, even if, as you point out with the monuments, something may seem all-powerful but also be weak as piss. And, I mean, our adolescence is the time that we are also, we fall victim to those lenses, that we're most pressured to be something, in scare quotes. And mostly this comes from the gaze of others, the way they see us.
Yeah.
I thought a really interesting illustration that you gave of this was in the character of Pete and the idea of the hounds, who are supposedly these malevolent creatures, but, you know, Pete just wants to deliver pizza. And I wanted to ask then how destructive is this idea of destiny, or even just that amorphous notion that we've all heard at some point of living up to our potential?
Yeah. And it's not even that. It's that Pete had inherited, you know, this generational conflict, and he didn't even know why he was supposed to hate who he hated. Like, that part of the message hadn't sort of come through. Everything else had. And he felt the weight. He was basically Hamlet. He had been told, hey, go, do this thing. And he completely crumbled under the weight of that task. And, you know, I wanted to look at that, and I wanted to, you know, not that my novels are didactic, but I wanted to sort of show sort of teenagers and readers that, you know, you choose who you want to be. Like, you know, somebody can tell you to do something, but you are the one who has to do it and live with it. So make sure that you believe in what it is that you are doing. And the inspiration for Pete came from, I remember, and in terms of like sort of, you know, inheriting sort of conflicts, I went to school and the first friend that I made in primary school was Turkish. And so I come home as a Greek kid. I'm like, oh, hey, this is my friend. His name is Mark. And then, you know, it sounds like a very Anglo name. So that sort of, you know, that gets the seal of approval. Then, you know, my grandmother meets his mom and she's the most Turkish woman you have ever met. And suddenly it's like, oh, what the hell? And I remember we became close very, very quickly, and our families became very, very close very quickly. And it's really funny how quickly that sort of, oh, the Turks are bad and we believe that because we're Greek, how quickly that dissipated, like, the moment we understood each other. And because, you know, Mark had no idea that he wasn't supposed to like Greek people, and I had no idea that I wasn't supposed to like Turkish people. And sort of our families had to very quickly sort of come to the table, and now they're our closest family friends.
Of course, the rebel gods are coming for Connor, Sally and Lockie, and they embody human characteristics that we all have: love, fear, hunger, or we've lost hunger, but in the narrative. Is the clash between these gods, I guess, our own personal struggles writ large? And I wonder then, if it is, what are we to make of the threat that they pose and this potential end of the world that they represent?
Look, they were always designed that there was such a fine line between love and fear, because, you know, you could do the same action that you do because you love someone, you could do because you feared losing them. Does that make sense? And
yes.
So, you know, I looked at these sort of primal drives, which were based on, you know, it was never my intent to be like, oh no, don't give in to these things, because I designed them based on how we evolved. And so it was, I think they call it the F, which is, it's our, what inspired us to evolve was these influences, and they sort of guided the way that humanity and nature itself and animals sort of came to arrive at the point that we see them now. And so I was never saying, you know, sort of don't dive too deep into these, but it was more, you know, it was more a conversation about free will. And these are gods who take away our free will. And yes, you could probably make the world better if you could control everyone and reach a particular outcome. But if one person or being has that control, is the world actually better? And so that was where I was taking that. And that was where sort of these gods that's where their sort of their control, love and fear was just their way of controlling people. But I did want to make sure that it felt deeply human and that we could see ourselves in the villain, even if we obviously wouldn't act like them.
There's a moment in the book that I'm going to be vague about again for spoilers, but excellent. Where Connor is presented with the idea of a world of love. And it has that nice sort of prima facie ring to it. And I immediately went, back away, Connor, because I think in our brains, in our deep brains, a part of us knows and we hear every day about all the atrocities that are actually committed so in the so-called name of love, from, you know, domestic violences to, you know, violences writ large where people supposedly love their own and that makes them hate others. And I just, the tensions that you played with there were just brilliant, brilliant. I loved them.
Oh, thank you. You're making me feel very smart. I'm enjoying this immensely.
I am speaking with Will Kostakis. We have been discussing both Monuments and Rebel Gods. Rebel Gods is, of course, the second book in the duology. But do you know what? This is the perfect time of year to be buying books. So go and buy both of them. Will, thank you so much for taking the time coming on Final Draft.
Oh, it was an absolute pleasure.
Stories. Ideas. Music. 2SER. 107.3.
This is 2SER 107.3, where I have you for about a minute and a half longer. My name is Andrew Popel, and this show is Final Draft. Now, if you tuned in late, if you're tuning in now and you're wondering what you've missed, today on the show I had Will Kostakis. He is an incredible YA author from Sydney, and we have been discussing his fantasy duology, Monuments and Rebel Gods. Now, if you want to catch up on that conversation, you can go to 2SER.com. You can also go to the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. I will let you know that Will and I spoke for the better part of an hour, and there's some fantastic stuff that didn't make it to air. If you go to the podcast, you can catch that full conversation, including us musing more on the idea of gods and maybe some of the concerns that Will might have had in approaching this issue that in our modern society can almost be weaponized by some people. The 2SER, the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast, it's available on the 2SER app, where you can find so many other great podcasts from this great station. Before I say goodbye, I want to also remind you, Final Draft is on the socials. You can find us on Insta, on Facebook, on, what's the other one? Twitter. We are at Final Draft 2SER, and we can keep the reading conversation going all summer. I am gearing up for the 2021 releases, getting ready for what's going to happen next year. My name is Andrew Popel. I will see you next week for more Final Draft. Thank you for having me, and as always, I wish you happy reading, and bye for now.